And as always, I'm always a little conscious of the pressure in my head and chest and face and knees as these folks are into serious punishment round the clock every moment on me these days, just putting it out there so you know if I'm talking too fast or have to leave early, which it's already time to leave early. But we're just going to, I think we'll jump a little ahead to this poisonous interchange between a boy and his tutor. Alice is at the point where she's explaining that the pedagogue, this is Alice speaking, the pedagogue must put a early stop to the desire to know. This is really critical that we have to think about, so that the child does not become aware too early of what is being done to him. Quote from the poisonous pedagogue, boy, where do children come from, dear tutor? Tutor, they grow in their mother's body. When they have gotten so large that there is no more room for them, the mother must push them out, something like what we do when we have eaten a lot and then go to the privy. But it hurts the mother very much. And then the baby is born? Yes. But how does the baby get into the mother's body? That we don't know. We only know that it grows there. That's very strange. No, not at all. Look at that forest over there. No one is surprised by this because everyone knows that trees grow out of the earth. In the same way, no reasonable person is surprised that a baby grows in its mother's body. For this has been so as long as people have been on earth. And do midwives have to be there when a baby is born? Yes, because the mothers are in such pain that they can't take care of themselves all alone, since not all women are so hard-hearted and fearless that they can be around people who must undergo so much pain. There are women in every town who are paid to stay with the mothers until the pain has passed. They are like the women who prepare dead bodies for funerals. Washing the dead or undressing and dressing them are also tasks not to everyone's liking, which people therefore perform for money. I would like to be there sometime when a baby is born. If you want an idea of the pain and distress mothers experience, you don't need to go and see a baby being born. One doesn't have that chance because mothers do not know themselves at what moment the pains will begin. Instead, I will take you to Dr. R. when he is about to amputate a patient's leg or remove a stone from someone's body. Those people wail and scream just like mothers giving birth. My mother told me not long ago that the midwife can tell right away whether the baby is a boy or a girl. How does the midwife know? I will tell you. Boys are much more broad-shouldered and large-boned than girls. But primarily, boys' hands and feet are always broader and coarser than girls' hands and feet. For example, you need only look at the hand of your sister, who is nearly a year and a half older than you. Your hand is much broader than hers, and your fingers are thicker and fleshier. That makes them look shorter, too, although they are not. And that's from, unquote, from Mr. Hulsinger from 1801. And Alice comments, once the child's intelligence has been stultified by answers such as these, then he can easily be manipulated. And my comment, this applies to all of us, broadly, across class. Once our intelligence has been stultified, we can be easily manipulated. This explains why Kropotkin's Complete Education was never implemented. Continuing. Or with the next poisonous pedagogue, Mr. Basado again. Basado, quote, it is rarely useful and often harmful for you to give children reasons why you are not granting their wishes. Even when you are willing to do what they desire, accustom them now and again to postponement, to being satisfied with just part of what they want, and to accepting gratefully a boon other than the one they requested. Yeah. I have to comment on this. Small children, because they're honest, will show you in play what's up for them. So it's very important that you let them direct it. Direct their play. That you become that lump of clay they shape as they see fit, as they need it. I learned this with my grandson, Nanji, when he was 2, almost 3. He would show me whatever he was trying to figure out. I suspect that's one of the main reasons I got shut out of his life. As I also strongly suspect, his mother didn't get with my son by accident. Although Nanji, I'm certain, was an accident, as they say. Anyway, when we were playing, he would hand me a desired object and say, "Do you want this?" And I would say, "Yes." And he would say, "You can't have it. You can have this instead." And so I would react authentically. I'd cry and I'd say, "No, I want the other one." And he would be firm. "No, you can't have it. You can have this instead." And we would repeat this over and over. And I would voice consistently an honest reaction to that abusiveness. I would never accept a substitute. When our voices get stolen, we lose our light, our way in the world. Voice is central. Voice is core. We're going to be thinking more about this in upcoming shows. Thank you so much for listening, and I love you very much. Until next week, peace.
Come away.